The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
I got one thing to read before we bring on our guest here. I got two cats at home. You know, I like to take care of them. So Pets Life, the company that we've been partnered with, is a Minnesota pet care company that has created an oral care product for your cat or dog that is 100% natural, 100% safe, and 100% guaranteed to improve, your pet's oral health. Save hundreds in vet bills and improve your pet's health by visiting PetsLife.com. That's PETZLife.com. Enter the promo code OMAHA, as in the second part of Cold Omaha, and save 20% on every online order. Or mention Omaha for 20% off any phone order. That's PetsLife.com, spelled with a Z. PETZLife.com. Back here for another episode of Midwest Swing. We've reached episode number 25. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We're part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Cold Omaha is on Twitter at Cold Omaha MN. I am your host, Brandon Warren. You can find me at Brandon_Warren. I'm joined in studio by not only Tom Schreier at TSchreier3, got the three on there this time.
Yeah.
But Zach Wright. Zach, how's it going?
Not too bad. Thanks for making some room for me here in the studio, and I'm always always glad to be able to come in and help out where I can.
So Zach, this weekend is starting up a Golden Gophers podcast. Zach, what are you guys going to focus on when you have that?
Well, for starters, for this weekend, we'll kind of just talk about everything that's happened over the last couple of months. There's been kind of a lot of turmoil with a new president being hired, a lot of things going on with, obviously, Coach Richard Pitino, the basketball team. So we'll talk about that, kind of check in.
Pretty good baseball season, too. You better not.
Pretty good baseball season.
We'll not forget about that.
We'll definitely check out about that as well. Kind of just cover kind of what we've missed over the last couple months and get ready for the football season that kicks off here, really, in just a couple of short weeks.
Well, we're coming off a 4th of July holiday where the Twins played the Oakland A's, opened up a 3-game set at home. Very few eyes saw that game. Well, maybe not very few, but they weren't on TV, which was a little bit strange. I was sitting at home hoping to be able to watch that, and instead I put Corey Provis's voice in my ears and laid down on the couch, took a little bit of a nap. But one person who was on site, besides our own Tom Schreier, was Mike Berardino of the Pioneer Press, and we got Mike on the line. He is out and about doing a couple things today, so we got him on the phone. Mike, how's it going?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you?
I'm good, and it's great to have you back on again. We've really enjoyed having you here, and got a couple, well, actually more than a couple Twins topics to break down with you today. But first of all, how about a recap of yesterday's game? It sounded as though, you know, based on listening to it on the radio, that Ricky Nolasco pitched pretty well, at least early on, and then, you know, ran into a little bit of trouble right before he came out of the game.
Yeah, I think that's well put. It's kind of the pattern for him of late is that they stay with him maybe a little bit too long, and once they do take him out, there's inherited runners and they score. So that's kind of what happened. He was as good as I've seen him as a Twin at times yesterday. Mm-hmm. I've seen him at his best way back in his Marlin days, and a lot of people here still haven't seen what he can be when he's efficient and he's pounding the zone and he's putting you away with the curve and the fastball command is pinpoint. He was all those things. Oakland's not a good team this year, so you read that into it as well. But
sure.
That was the good Ricky yesterday, and Twins being the Twins, they found a way not to win on good Ricky day.
Well, so I'm looking at Kendall Graveman, who I'm familiar with, but only 4 swinging strikes, 3 strikeouts, 4 walks, yet the Twins could only scratch out 3 hits and only 1 run and 6 2/3. What was he doing to keep them off balance? You know, 19 looking strikes is not a small amount. So, I mean, did they have an approach against him, and he worked it against them by you know, maybe getting ahead in the count? Or what exactly happened that prevented the Twins from cashing in, you know, a couple extra hits or anything like that?
Well, I think that I just will say that Molitor seemed kind of upset with his hitters after the game, and as much as he'll show it, with the lack of adjustment within the game. I mean, they faced this guy on Memorial Day, and then again on 4th of July, so I've called him Holiday Kendall Graveman. But, he was around the zone, and they were plugging in Vargas, surprise, a cameo by Kenny Vargas, and Eddie Rosario with another start, and So some of that youth returns to the lineup yesterday, and they didn't adjust within the game, according to him. That's what Molitor said. He thought that they could have used the approach against Graveman a little bit better, but they didn't, and that's, I think, your data would support that, maybe.
Right.
That they were taking pitches they should have been offering at, maybe offering at some they should have been taking, one of those kind of days. It was a very, for a 3-hour game, it was kind of zippy. I was pleased by that. But it was, and here's the thing, another 3-1 loss extends this, overall number of now 1-34 when the Twins scored 3 runs or less. And what that tells you is it always seems to me that good teams can win those low-scoring, close games, the class battles where mm-hmm. one mistake will do you in, and the Twins just don't win those games. If they don't bash their way to victory, it's not going to happen. You can blame the pitching, you can blame the defense, you can blame anything for having 35 games where they've been held to 3 runs or less. But I would say it just comes down to small mistakes, little things that good teams do well and end up winning those games by and large, and the poor teams mess that up.
There's been a few moves here in the last couple of days, and I want to get to those. But before I do, Joe Mauer's been DHing a little bit more frequently, in my opinion. What is your take there? Because honestly, I think what I'm seeing is he's wearing down, or at least his stats are reflecting a player who's not swinging like he was even a month ago. And I know you had asked Molitor if there was any, I think it was you that asked if there was any worry about him or if he was injured or he was just DHing a lot lately, but do you think that that's just as a measure to try to get his legs back under him, or where are you at with that?
I'm curious, just like the rest of the media corps. Terry Ryan's been asked about this several
right.
times. Molitor's been asked about several times. The one guy who doesn't really make himself available very much at all anymore that I see to answer these questions is Joe.
Right.
So I look forward to the next time I have an opportunity to ask Joe that question. But good or bad, he's been kind of scarce of late, pregame and postgame. So that's, I think he takes a lot of treatment. I know he does a lot of stretching. And it would seem, if anything, during this downturn, he appears to be upping the amount of time spent on those things. One thing he's not doing is explaining his downturn to the media and to the fans through us. So, well, whatever. That's why we're a little bit in the dark. I mean, you're intuitively, you would say, yeah, if he's DHing a lot more, they're trying to protect something. Molitor talks about the reasoning being big picture and trying to keep Joe strong for the full year. You would wonder if there was some sort of throwing issue, something in the arm itself, because if he's DHing, he's still putting some strain on his body. He's playing the game. But if he's not at first base, you know, the one thing that you're taking strain off of is the throwing arm potentially. But I see no indication that that's a problem. And I don't think they'd put a guy out there with a sprained UCL or something. I do think, though, that you're right. Lost bat speed, some more chase in the last month. He had a good game yesterday. Of course, if Joe Mauer has a good game and it's not on television, does it appease the haters? I don't know. I don't know. But the tree did fall in the forest twice. And he looked better. Now, I had noted at the end of Sunday's game, Saturday and Sunday, when everybody on the Twins is banging out hits, Joe Mauer not banging out hits. And if you look back, you had to go back, I believe, 165 games by Mauer to find a time when he finished the day with a lower batting average. Now, there's a lot more to the game than batting average, but because he's a 3-time batting champion, mm-hmm. you always tend to look at that, and he's a guy who made the 300-hitting catcher a thing in this era. But he was down at 258, and he hadn't been that low since, I believe, 256 at the end of a White Sox game, June 24th or so of 2015. So, and of course, he had the big April this year, so that you never had that early season, you know, abysmal number. It's something to watch. I mean, they're trying to maintain it. They're trying to get some durability out of him and some production, but yeah, 3 extra base hits in a month, 1 double, 1 triple, 1 homer since he left Seattle with 3 homers in 3 games. That's a concern.
Yeah, and it's worth noting he was out of the lineup on Sunday before Plouffe got scratched, and so
maybe
he plays first base yesterday if he doesn't play on Sunday, but that they're putting Kenny Vargas out there instead. Vargas obviously not a Gold Glover over there at first base. that does trip a couple of triggers. Another guy who's been out of the lineup lately, perhaps for different reasons, is Robbie Grossman. Do you get the sense now with Eddie Rosario recalled, a story you broke actually, which was pretty cool? Do you get the sense that they might be on the verge of a platoon out and left with Rosario and Grossman, or is Grossman the fourth, or is this just a short term thing where they're getting a feeling out process to see if Rosario has changed a bit since AAA?
Yeah, maybe the last version. I do sense that Molitor has lost some confidence in Grossman from the left side, even though his on-base percentage is basically the same, batting right and right. Batting left. His average now has quite a gap mm-hmm. between the two, maybe 210 from the left side last I looked, and about 320 or something from the right. But and of course, coming in, the preconceived notion on Grossman that Molitor had and repeated, you heard it, he repeated it a number of times in the first week to 10 days that Grossman got here, was better from the right side. Better from the right side. So they had that in their mind, but I wrote a long thing about Robbie Grossman for Sunday's paper.
Yeah, I read that. That was very good, by the way.
Yeah, he was, you know, he's not an expansive guy, so I was very pleased. He's kind of a shy fella. It was good to get him talking in Yankee Stadium one day, and it turns out he's got some thoughts about how he's been able to improve and what he's learned in his few major league seasons and having a real run at success in Houston on a very bad team and then a little lesser success as the team improved, and then he just got pushed aside. But he's a video hound. He's a guy who really seems to get a lot out of video, and I thought it was interesting that whereas Molitor has told us that he will teach his younger players, the Buxtons and Rosario now of the world, to really focus in on that night's starting pitcher and then at one or two relievers at the end of the game, Grossman really tries to break down everybody that he might possibly see. So the whole bullpen, he's looking at video. It's one of the reasons he shows up there about 12:45 every day when other people might roll in at 3 or later. He's a professional. He's a grinder. And I think they still really like him. But I also think they should have traded him by now.
Yeah.
I know he's not going to make any money for a couple more years because of his service time. But you had Robbie Grossman at probably the peak of his life for a month, a solid month of excellence. Meanwhile, Eddie Rosario is now AAA raking almost from day one. He had a couple bad weeks, but doing exactly what you sent him down there to do. So you know that you want to get him back here. And I think that now you've got this log jam and this odd situation where now you start to wonder, well, are they going to send Buxton down again?
Yeah.
Because Terry Ryan's saying in Chicago on the last trip, we're willing to live with some of the offensive things with Buxton because of the value he provides defensively. And when he does get on base, we like the way he's running the bases, et cetera. But now Buxton has a little bit of an injury concern because he smashed into the wall, but it's nothing specific. It's general soreness.
Yeah, that's right.
Do you think that Paul Molitor has an unnatural affinity for Danny Santana? And the reason I ask, I'm not saying it's bad or anything, but I feel like he's constantly trying to get Danny in there as though there's something more to unlock from Danny Santana. And I sense from fans a little bit of exasperation. Now, that aside, knowing Buxton was banged up, couldn't play yesterday, I still feel like fans are like, yep, got to get Danny in there, got to get Danny in there, and that's kind of Molitor's thing.
I no doubt the tools of Danny Santana continue to captivate the organization in a way that the sabermetricians will mock.
Sure.
Those tools are all there. They're still there. Even though he does not get on base and even though he tends to bunt foul far more than he bunts fair, they love the fact that he works on his bunting and he will try bunting. And Molitor, you know, to extend that unnatural affinity line, which is a good line, you know, it's getting to the point where Molitor, being a great bunter himself, may be working against him as a manager because he seems to think it's funny. They say, you know, the great players struggle to handle those who are mortal in all sports.
Sure.
Because they can't do what they were able to do. But Mahler's to the opposite. He seems to totally believe that they will get this bunting thing eventually, and that the bunting thing will pay off for them with just a mountain of hits and chaos on the bases. And we don't see that. What we see them is bunting their way out of innings. And I know, you know, the modern fan hates the bunt and has statistical reason to do so, certainly the sacrifice bunt. But if you're not even good at, you know, you've got Joe Mauer tried to drop a bunt. It wasn't against the shift either. They were just playing deep. Any bunted foul. There's no doubt in my mind that the Twins lead the majors in bunting foul. I don't even have to find where I would even look for that number. I just have no doubt that probably the last 2 years, in the Mulder era, that he wants them to try it, and they bunt foul. And Doug, would you agree?
Yeah. I think that's my thing is enough with the bunts already. And I just feel like the bunt makes sense when you're playing for one run and you know, late innings and all that. But when you're bad, just let guys swing. You're in as much of an evaluation period and seeing what guys can do in situations as you are playing for one or two runs. I'm not saying you throw away games at the expense of development or whatever, but I just – and I've seen some people tweet that too. You know, the way Mulder will run four guys out there in the eighth inning of a game like he's managing to win the pennant when maybe he should just let a guy struggle through the eighth. And I don't know. I think I really have grown to enjoy Mulder as a manager in some respects, and in other respects, I, you know, things will kind of, you know, prick up my ears and be like, oh, well, I wonder why he did that. So I don't know. I think it's just all part of the process, and I do agree with people that at some time there are times where it's like, okay, let this young team just kind of go and kind of pull back the, you know, take off the reins a little bit. But that's just my opinion.
As far, yeah, getting back to Danny Santana, here's a scenario that will really freak out the fan base if it comes to pass. But it strikes me, and we saw a little bit of it after an injury with Escobar on the road. But and why Escobar's not on the DL right now is kind of a mystery. But
it is true.
You know, they're sending people out to Lourdes to get some water for them. It'll all fix itself. But you know, if they trade Eduardo Nunez, I don't believe, and I don't know that they will. I think it's probably 60-40 they keep him right now. Who knows? Yeah. Who knows? Just a guess. But he's got value. He's at the peak of his value too. And again, struggling organizations only get back to being on top when they trade people a year too early and at the peak of their value. Then a year too late and at the base of it. And it seems like the Twins, one move after another, end up cutting ties with people at the base of their value, not the way to do business. Anyway, if they trade Nunez this month at the peak of his value, I don't think they turn the keys back over to Eduardo Escobar. I think they take a look at Danny Santana at shortstop again.
Oh, that's going to be so unpopular.
Curiosity. I just think that they have that in there. Mulder has said a few things even when they brought Santana back from his recent rehab and away. I don't think they've closed that door entirely, even though we've seen that Santana relaxes in the outfield and is less prone to mistakes in all phases when he's out there. But at shortstop, he's just a puddle of nerves. Well, he bounced a throw the other day in about seven innings of playing short. But don't just remember that if they trade Nunez, I think we're going to see Danny Santana at shortstop 3.0, because again, the tools are right there in their face. The tools are obvious. Big arm, that's a good shortstop's arm, but something has always been lacking in the in his playability at short.
I'm not prepared for the Twitter backlash for that, but you know, we'll see what happens. To what degree were you surprised to see Kenny Vargas in the clubhouse when you got to the stadium yesterday?
Extreme. I wouldn't miss him.
I wouldn't
have been any more. I was not prepared for that one. I just did not see that. I thought the whole point, the whole move was going to be Trevor May. If they put Poop on the DL, it'd be to get Trevor May in there. But you know, I think we're in this phase, and I think it's going to be turnstile time, and it probably should be when you're with this record. But Kenny Vargas, here's the thing. Even it's got to be maddening for the players in the organization sometimes because they're sent down to do certain things, and they're told to work on certain things. And then when they come back, it seems like there's nitpicking that goes on, even public comments. And I can't tell you what I mean. I tweeted it yesterday. But if you look at Kenny Vargas's slash line from Rochester, and this is a guy who really didn't get a look in the spring. It was all about Park in the spring. And of course, they're going to hold Arcia because he was out of options. Vargas had one more year of options, and he used them. They used them on him. But he went down there, and lately especially, he's just been a monster. He's been that's as good as he can hit. And, what is like an 850 OPS or something in the mm-hmm. International League? But his batting average is like 235. So Terry Ryan yesterday, I said, well, what is Vargas doing better at AAA? And instead of talking about what I'm sure the reports would say to back up that high on base and that high slug and the things that he's doing from right and left side, he said, well, the batting average isn't, what we're looking for sort of thing. And as I'm thinking to myself, poor Kenny, he can't win. I mean, what do you want? You want Kenny Vargas to hit 320 he's just a masher. That's all he is. He's a very limited masher. And there are teams out there that I think do have interest in Kenny Vargas still, in giving him a chance at the major league level. I don't think he's going to get any real chance here, but, potentially, who knows? I mean, he probably needs a Mauer injury to get a real run. Because they're going to spread that DH role around now, I think.
Yeah.
And I think we're seeing the last couple of days that Sano needs a couple of days at DH each week. I don't think that you really want to run Sano out there all seven, but we'll see.
What's funny is when they sent Vargas down the last time, he was going on a stretch where I think he'd hit like 320, but with no power.
Yeah.
So it just seems like it's you almost wonder what the psychology is of the public comments. Because, like you had hinted before, I think 2 weeks ago, about how you can read the public comments and what that might mean for a player's value or if they're being shopped, that doesn't seem to indicate anything positive on the Kenny Vargas front internally. And that just strikes me as strange because, the other thing is they could have brought up Jorge Polanco. They could have a move that I've been advocating for a while. Now with, I think you said now two 40-man roster spots open with the outrighting of Mastroianni, you could have added Beresford and brought him up to fill out the end of your bench. I know Molitor's wanted to get back to 12 pitchers for quite some time, or at least they've said so publicly. I feel like if you were going to be any sort of negative on Vargas, what do you bring him up for in the first place?
Yeah, that's well put. And why not accentuate the positive, especially for a guy who doesn't seem to have a long-term role in your organization, and you're running out of time to move him to somebody else. I mean,
right.
Kenny Vargas is, I don't see where he fits into an opening day roster next year.
And he's out of options next year, I think, right?
He's out of options, yeah. So you'd have to carry him. Where are you going to put him? It'd be the same situation. You if anything, your comments should accentuate things that would make him appealing to Japanese teams, because that's where you're going to get some value out of Kenny Vargas. You could have had it this winter, as I wrote. There was interest in Vargas in Asia, especially in Japan, because big power, big presence. And I still don't think the door is closed on him getting a chance somewhere, probably with second division team, to be the DH for the most part in MLB. It's still possible, but he's just blocked. He's just buried. It's got to be maddening. And I know he's back now, but we'll see how long the leash is and if there really is interest in finding out about Kenny Vargas. I think their curiosity remains much greater in Danny Santana, who was a top 10 prospect for them before having a couple failures, than Kenny Vargas. Vargas remains a curiosity, I think, to the Twins. And I kind of like, well, we didn't even, draft him. We just signed him off the free agent, amateur free agent heap, and he's fat, and he's still kind of fat, and we'll give him some at bats and see what happens.
So the move that was made to get him up here was putting Trevor Plouffe on the disabled list. Sounds like he's going to miss, 3 to 4 weeks or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
And so that really puts a crimp in trade deadline stuff, because if he goes the full 4 weeks and you put him on the 4th, you're looking at right at the deadline to get him back. I think with his contract situation, specifically, like you've mentioned, what he's due next year if they take him to that last year of arbitration, whoever has his rights in the offseason. I think you could get him through waivers in August and make a deal there. And maybe desperation crops up and you get a low-end prospect not on the 40-man roster. And maybe something comes together. But I feel like this is just kind of like the cherry on the top of a really brutal season as far for the Twins as far as player movement and making decisions or having decisions made for them. Where do you stand on Trevor Plouffe right now?
That's more of the same of the timeline being suboptimal for the Twins. And of course, they couldn't do anything about this other than maybe have traded Plouffe in the winter, but yep. The market didn't materialize the way they wanted it to because David Freese was hanging out there as a fallback for a number of teams. And then Plouffe got off to a slow start, an injury-marred start, first half. Three major areas now that have bothered him. Two have landed him on the DL. And, yeah, the timeline now is not good. And I think I would disagree that you could get him through waivers even with a down year and even with that number, because it's only going to be, it's right now as we sit here, it's about 3.6 remaining. And then in another month, it'll be down there about 2.7. There are teams that would take a shot on that for 2 months with a chance to retain him or non-tender him. They have that option for nothing. I mean, you can work out a trade deal, but it's going to be interesting that the Twins will be dealing from a position of weakness again if they want to move Trevor Plouffe in season, and even if they want to move him out of season, he's coming off a down year. It's hard to imagine these numbers writing themselves. I know it's a counting stat, and those are anathema, but I will say that over his last 2 years, Trevor Plouffe averaged 58.5 extra base hits. He was a doubles machine, and he had enough home runs, and he even threw in a couple of triples with his wheels. Well, what's he have this year? It's like 11 or something total. So, that's a stark drop off, and there are still teams that will look at the counting stats and be seduced or off put, and in his case, it'll be the latter.
I think a smart team might see him though as the public comments you made playing at 65-70% all season, and buy low on him. You know, flip the Twins an A ball pitcher that maybe isn't in the, you know, maybe like the Eduardo Nunez deal where the Twins sent Subaran, who hasn't done anything since, you know, one of those deals.
So what a trade.
You know, if you can flip somebody and buy low on a guy, that's what an enterprising organization will do. A couple names that have come up, actually one I read and one that I'm kind of making up, but we'll see what you think of that. It sounds like Irvin Santana could have some interest around the league. I do have questions of if the Twins feel they can move him based on, you know, the Hughes injury and just having to have guys that can throw innings. You know, they could, in theory, add someone like Jason Wheeler to the 40-man roster and just throw him to the Wolves and see what happens. He's been pretty good at AAA, been taken off the 40-man beforehand. But if they were to get a good enough offer for Irvin Santana, do you think they'd move him? And then what do you think of this? If it's Texas that is interested, as was reported by the other newspaper in town, I think Texas could use Santana and Kurt Suzuki. They've run in three catchers through there, and none of them are playing particularly well. Bobby Wilson not doing too much offensively, I don't think. Chirinos, he's so-so, and then Brian Holiday as well. So, I mean, maybe there could be a twofer deal there with the Rangers, and the Rangers have a pretty strong farm system. Again, you're not going to extort their top prospects or anything, but if you dig deep, you could probably find a couple, you know, hidden gems. What are your thoughts about those two things?
I like the idea of Suzuki as a big shop to a team like the Rangers because, yeah, they're in it, and they're creative, and they do have a pretty deep system, as Ken Rosenthal wrote in his notes over the weekend. They have guys that you don't even think about that have value and have had very good first halves. And the Rangers were in the mix on Suzuki when the Twins signed him. They were one of his other options.
Oh, sure.
I know I reported that at the time. They were looking into him closely.
Didn't they end up with Giovanni Soto, I think?
I think so. That winter meetings, the Rangers were in the mix. So they have respect for him, and they know him well from that division with all his time with Oakland. Irvin Santana is interesting. It strikes me that, for one thing, you know, the Twins didn't even have to pay him for the first half of last year because of the PED suspension. So they got a rebate there. there's 2 years left and 27 total after this year and about $6 million left for this year or whatever. It's nearly seven. So how much of a rebate do you want to do? And what about what you've seen from him so far would make you think that he's a cut bait kind of guy? I think Irvin's done what he's supposed to do for them, what they wanted him to do. And I know the team's not winning, but there's a lot to like about Irvin Santana at $13.5 million, especially in light of what Phil Hughes appears to be going to what he's set to give you over the final 3 years of that extension, which is complete uncertainty with the thoracic outlet syndrome, a pretty severe thing to come back from, and not everybody comes back seamlessly from that thing. So Ricky Nolasco, suddenly his value is growing, and he leads the entire staff in F war, as I pointed out in today's story, which might surprise the haters.
I saw one specific one that said, "Oh, that invalidates Fangraph's existence." I'm like, I think Fangraphs will do fine without you.
Well, Ricky's always been the king of FIP, pretty much. And I don't know, maybe you could explain. I mean, I know the more balls in play and whatever, but if it's a luck related stat, he's just been the unluckiest bastard of all of his entire career. But I'd be very careful, because they got Irvin to come to Minnesota, and that quality guy with that long a resume is going to be hard to just go out and get another one of those guys, and it's going to be a bad free agent market, right? I mean, I don't think it's...
No, with Strasburg gone, it's pretty ugly.
Yeah, so that's another reason why Irvin, it shouldn't be hard to move Irvin Santana. It might not even be impossible anymore to move Ricky Nolasco, because teams are looking around and seeing that if they want to go get somebody in free agency, going to be very hard. There'll be some other guys that Matt Harvey, they say, and maybe Jose Fernandez will pop up on the trade market this year, but Sonny Gray. But I think Irvin's held up his side of the bargain. I think he's been good, and I don't see any reason, unless it's and really, even if it's big talent from Double-A, I think it's got to be almost major league ready talent in his case, because a controllable starter with Santana like abilities, it gets pretty dire if you take him out of the equation in that rotation. And when they were in contention last year, when they really needed him to step up and fix what was ailing him in August, late August, I was there in Tampa Bay when Neil Allen rolled in baseballs in the bullpen and got his arm slot back.
That was huge.
One of his drills, and it's a great drill to have him just get down like a shortstop and backhand a ball and just find your natural arm slot like you did when you were a kid. And wow, he was good in late August and all through September. And that final start against the Royals, that was ace stuff right there. That was what you need out of that guy. He held up his end of the bargain, had the back thing this year, but anybody's tradable, but I have a hard time believing that the Twins should be focusing much of their effort on moving him.
Yeah, for me, it's like when teams approach the Timberwolves and ask about Zach LaVine, and they're like, "Oh, we got this barely used Ricky Rubio here for you." It's the Ricky thing. You try pushing Alaska on somebody when they ask about Irv, and try to do the product swap. All right, before we let you go, I do have one question for you. What, in your gut feel, who are the Twin or Twins that are headed to San Diego when we find out tonight?
I liked how you used the plural. that was a good one.
Never accuse us of not being optimistic, I guess, right?
Yeah. No, it's got to be Nunez, doesn't it? I mean, he fits the mold perfectly of what a bad team should be sending. He's had a really solid year, and he can play multiple positions. And you look at Dozier's, even with his big June, he's still middle of the pack in second base F war and a number of other measures. And Suzuki, even I was surprised, in his F war is still middle of the pack among the catchers. I don't see how either of those can parlay those big Junes into a spot unless there's injuries. And conceivably, there's an injury I'm not aware of at one of those two positions, but it looks like they have plenty of others to choose from. It should be Eduardo. And do you really want to have to interview him if he finds out he didn't make it? I mean,
no.
Do you want to really see sad Eduardo?
Right. You won your eBay back in the day.
It would just be too much to handle, because he's such a good guy, and he's so popular in that clubhouse, and it would just be devastating to have to talk to Nooney if he didn't make it. Now, if he does make it tonight and he's in front of the cameras, it's going to be outstanding and just a memorable moment, because this guy has been through quite a bit in his career, as we know, well documented, and even here has always been underestimated and kind of just okay, well, you can get by with him for a week or two, but you don't want to get overexposed there, because he's not an everyday guy. Well, he's still only 29 years old and he's in his prime, and good for him. What a first half. You think it's easy playing day after day when you're five runs down and you're buried in the standings and people think you're a joke as a team? You think that's easy? So no. He has brought it every day like he's in first place in New York, and I'd like to see him in San Diego.
Yep, I agree. I you can sell me on the idea that if you want to take the guy that's been the most consistent year, end to end in the first half, you got to take him over a Suzuki, Maurer, who's obviously faded, and Dozier, who turned it on, and Fernando Abad even faded too. I know that not many middle relievers make it, but yeah, I'm hoping that tonight after the game it'll be Nunez that everybody's crowding around and talking to. So, Mike, thank you very much. Hopefully we'll have you on here in another couple weeks. We might have to mess with the schedule a little bit because I'm going to be out of town. But thanks for joining us, and hopefully we'll see you at the park tonight.
Anytime. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. That was Mike Berardino of the Pioneer Press. We got a few minutes left here, guys. I did want to talk a little bit. Sorry to shield you guys out while Mike was on, but I did want to talk a little bit of Timberwolves and a little bit of Wild free agency before we get out of here today. How does that sound?
Yeah, sounds good.
So,
quick two Twins things. The
yeah.
Jepsen trade, was that as bad as people are making it out to be?
You know what? I didn't even think about asking the move. Yeah, Jepsen being cut was another one. I wanted to ask my buddy Beauchesne. See, the thing, when you don't write these things down, you forget.
Yeah, there's a lot of Twin stuff, to be honest.
I think Chiwei Hu is going to be a back end starter. I've got a couple quote unquote sources that have told me that they really like him, and the Rays, as long as he stays healthy, the Rays rotation has had issues doing that in the last few years. If he can stay healthy, he should be a good back end guy. I don't think it's that bad of a trade, to be honest with you, but it's a very poor man's version of Matt Kapp's trade. Very, very poor. I mean, like, destitute man's version, because they traded someone who could help them in the relatively
yeah.
near future. But
I mean, they got a guy who helped them get to 83 wins in a season where they kind of needed that, and it did create hope for the fan base, even if that hope was dashed 9 games into the regular season here. But
yeah,
it is kind of a bummer knowing that they do need pitching, and they need pitching through within their system. You know, they mm-hmm. so often now they've gone to the outside guys, and you overspend for Santana and Hughes and Nolasco, and they'd be much better off. I know Gibson's had his faults, but with more Gibsons, if you will. You know, guys that came through their system, cost-controlled, all that stuff. So the second thing, I posted this on our site. Sports Illustrated just came out with it's SI.com, came out with a story. Michael Beller on Brian Dozier, and he basically just kind of talked about how he had two rough months to start, as everyone knows, and he actually says that he should be pulling the ball and that his swing's improved, and that when he gets away from it, he has less success. Do you have
Weird.
Thoughts on? Yeah, I would...
sounds like something I've read before.
yeah, and so I just. Like I said, with our website, sometimes we like to look
sure.
to the outside and look at a national writer who doesn't maybe have the biases he would have here locally.
Right.
But yeah, definitely worth taking a look at. Do you have any thoughts on Dozier and just kind of, not necessarily just this, but his season as
honestly, well? Honestly, he's really turned it around, and I've been very impressed with the ability to do that. And there were a number of people, if you go on the forums, whether it's Twins Daily or anywhere else, talking about how they should have traded him when they had the chance, and now he's basically classic Brian Dozier. And the thing is, he's 29 years old. Some guys do fall off at 29. Fangraphs did write an article about how pull-heavy players can have the tendency to fall off very quickly. With that said, there was never any reason to move Brian Dozier last year when you're in the midst of a pennant race, or not a pennant race, but a playoff chase.
Yep.
So, no, I think the thing is, you got to get back to what you're good at. And it was the bizarro David Ortiz thing, where everybody wanted David Ortiz to spray the ball to the opposite field back in the early 2000s, and Twins fans are like, well, that's stupid. He's a pull hitter. Well, now the opposite of that is true, but Twins fans seem to just kind of soak in the logic of whatever the talking heads tell them, whether it's the TV broadcasters, pre or post game. And it's like, No, I mean, if what he's good at is pulling the ball, you milk the value out of that. Does that mean guys are going to attack him on the edge? Sure. Does that mean he can't take those pitches for balls? He walks plenty for a guy with a low batting average. So pitchers miss their spots, and he punishes that. I think the skill set is there for it's an all-or-nothing kind of power threat. You don't see those at second baseman very frequently. You know, it's usually an Adam Dunn type. Harmon Killebrew at his peak was that kind of guy. And so I don't think there's any issues with how he attacks the game.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like the general issue with the Twins this year is that your established guys, like, you know, Gibson got hurt, Plouffe just seems really banged up,
right.
Dozier wasn't performing, and then you just had way too many players that have nothing to prove at AAA mm-hmm. and can't perform in the majors. And my pet theory on this is literally there's just too many projects for a coaching staff to handle, and it creates kind of this chaos in the clubhouse.
It's the Schreier chaos theory.
It's the Schreier chaos theory, big established scientific theory. But mm-hmm. but yeah, I mean, how else do you see it? I mean, it just seems like Buxton has nothing more to prove in AAA. We talked about Vargas. There's nothing more he can really do there. Rosario went down there and killed it. Murphy, I think, is doing better in AAA.
He did in June, yeah.
You know, I mean, just it seems like from a big picture standpoint, they just had way too many guys that were unproven in the majors to expect. It's just like a giant sophomore slump, basically, for the Minnesota Twins this year.
I wonder if it wouldn't have made more sense to go out and just get another vet or maybe two like lower-end guys in free agency to just kind of stem the tide, you know, whether it was like a Steve Pierce to play a little bit all over or something. I don't know.
And you don't want too many of those low upside vets because that's just a boring team, you know. But
if you're not gonna be win, you got to be interesting, and that's not likely to happen. But what I did want to talk about too, so the Wild went out and signed Eric Staal, Alex Stalock.
Yeah, who's from here, Minnesota South St. Paul.
What I floated to Dan Myers, who covers the Wild for a couple different outlets, and you guys feel free to chime in, Zach especially.
Yeah,
it felt to me like it made more sense to do this than a Kyle Okposo move or pie in the sky, Steven Stamkos. That was never happening. But, I mean, it made more sense for the Wild to go foundational with these moves and spend as much money as you might have on one star or one, maybe not even star in the case of Okposo, because there was a lot of people out like Wild Extra that were not on board with that.
Yeah, Giles.
Yeah, Giles especially. And so I thought it made more sense to go foundational and kind of build up the situation. You know, it's a playoff team, but it's one that I think people viewed as a fringe playoff team. Where are you guys at with the first wave of moves? Actually, probably it's going to be the extent of the moves now because it's slowed down quite a bit now.
Everything happened quick.
Yeah, and the only other thing that is kind of out there is people saying that they're still waiting to hear from Matt Cullen.
Make a logical choice.
And that's probably, what, a fourth liner?
Yeah, yeah.
If he retires or not is really the question.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was, you know, was looking at is Bill Guerin, the general manager in Pittsburgh, talked about this past weekend that Matt Cullen still has a lot of, you know, gas left in the tank. He's going to be 40 in November.
Mm-hmm.
So it would just be kind of another leadership move, I think, for the team. I'm personally on board with the moves at first. You know, I was kind of talking with Tom before we jumped on, and I've always kind of been a fan of Eric Staal, even going back, you know, to his Carolina days. And
he had some big offensive seasons back in the day, about 10 years ago.
Exactly. And just kind of looking at his stats, I mean, last year, only 13 goals between two teams, 83 games in an 82-game season.
Yeah.
One of those,
I can't think of the word. Outliers. It was a crazy season where you play more games than
there are. So I mean, it was, you know, only the second lowest goal total he's had. His rookie season was the exception there with 11 goals. But you know, he's a guy who's going to come in. He's going to probably play your first line center. You know, and if he doesn't, it's going to give you a little bit of wiggle room to kind of maneuver around. I think you do see a guy like Mikael Granlund move to a wing.
Mm-hmm.
So your top two centers will be Koivu and Staal, you know, either or, whichever way you want to go.
So Staal good on the draw? I mean, is that going to be...
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's going to be another thing, too, is puck control, I suppose.
Yeah, and it's going to be a big clubhouse thing. You know, it was kind of interesting hearing to him talk to TSN over the weekend or at the end of last week when he made the decision to come here was just kind of looking for that right place. You know, he talked about how the Wild are close to kind of making that jump, and I know that, you know, a lot of the veteran moves that the Wild have made over the last couple of years might not have panned out the way they wanted to, the whole bringing back Thomas Vanek and the trade for Jason Pominville. But I think that I do agree where this is probably a little bit of a safer route where you go back and you bring in a guy like Staal, you bring back a guy like Stewart for a pretty relative cheap deal, a guy who enjoyed the short amount of time he had here, though there wasn't a ton of success.
Right.
We'll see if he can do something a little bit more with a reunion with Bruce Boudreau. You know, instead of going out to get a guy like Kyle Oposo, who people, you know,
you can
seem
overspend
to,
real quick.
People yeah. seem to forget he played his entire career next to Jonathan Tavares.
And he's a decent player.
There's not a Jonathan Tavares on this team, you know, for him to play with.
Right.
So, you know, it's a good move for a team like Buffalo, who has a young core. Kyle Oposo is going to be kind of a veteran now coming in. Maybe he can help step up a guy like Evander Kane in his game. And he's got definitely going to, you know, be a help for a guy like Jack Eichel. So I think the way that the Wild are moving, getting in some veteran leadership, and if they can get a guy like Matt Cullen to come back home, that's another guy with another vet in the locker room that's going to help this team out a lot.
What do you guys think of Alex Stalock as a third goalie? Two-way deal.
I mean, I was in San Jose when they drafted him. They were really high on him. I think it gives him
He had a rough year the last year, I heard.
Yeah, and it gives him some insurance. He's quote-unquote third goalie who will start in Iowa.
Yep.
Gives you some insurance in case Dubnyk gets hurt or in the year to come, Vegas takes Kemper and you want to back up in the system.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, there are a couple of different ways that I think that it's going to play out. You know, I think I do agree with you where it's going to give you some insurance in the event that, you know, Darcy Kemper is a guy that the Las Vegas team next year looks towards. You know, obviously the big name is Jason Zucker, a guy from Vegas, re-signed a two-year deal with the Wild. That is another name that they might try and dangle out there in attempt to not... In an attempt to shift some focus away from the defensive core for this team, because, you know, when you can really only keep three defensemen and mm-hmm. one of them is locked up going to be Suter, you don't really have many other options with a young defensive core.
So Suter's not exempt? He doesn't have a no movement or anything?
I think he's got no trade.
Vegas can't take him.
They can't take
They can't take, like, Parise,
okay,
Suter.
So that's good. That's good to know because you got the younger guys. There's a lot of it's very tumultuous with Dumba still kind of coming into his own in some trade rumors and that kind of thing as
well. Yeah, and I think that this year will be a big year for guys kind of on that little bit of a bubble. I think that, you know, Scandella would certainly be a lock to stay here. I think a guy like Jared Spurgeon would certainly be a lock to stay here. So, you know, you've got, you know, guys like Jonas Brodin, Matt Dumba, you know.
That's a talented bunch.
You know,
it's a little disappointing the production level, but it's a talented bunch. Yeah. So, one last thing, continuing that local angle, the Timberwolves bring in Cole Aldrich to be technically probably their third center, second center, depending on where Pekovic is, if Garnett comes back. I want to get your take on early Timberwolves free agency, and if you yawn, I'll understand. But I'm okay with that. I think it's fine that they didn't go out and spend crazy. But I felt like not only was the Aldrich move a good move, especially in light of the skyrocketing salaries, but making that big offer to Gasol tells me they're pessimistic about Garnett coming back. What are you guys' thoughts on those takes?
I think it's interesting what Garnett does. I also kind of wonder what his relationship with Thibodeau is. Some people thought because they were in Boston together, you know, it'd be a natural transition for him with Thibodeau coming in as the coach. But I also think Garnett might just be hurt. I mean, to my knowledge, he had some trouble like getting on and off the planes and buses, going up the stairs. You know, you got to think of how he's built and how much pressure you put on your knees
all
playing
that
basketball.
Beach running those days too.
Yeah, and so I mean, if anything, Garnett, my hope is that he's part of the big picture for years to come. I think he did a great job with Towns, kind of mentoring him, bring him in the league, and I think he's kind of the competitor you want. You want guys with kind of fire in their belly like Garnett, whether or not he's on the court.
Yeah, and I think it almost even speaks to not even worrying that maybe Kevin Garnett won't be back next year. If he is, what are you going to get from Kevin Garnett next year? He's a guy that, you know, didn't play a ton last year, you know, because of injury. But, you know, he's a guy that certainly I think that Tom Thibodeau would want him in the locker room just because, you know, you're going to get another year of these younger guys kind of sticking together, molding together under the leadership of Kevin Garnett. I think that that's something that they're going to really want to try and pursue forward. But, you know, kind of on the outside looking in, I don't follow the NBA as heavily as a lot of other people or a lot of other sports that I do kind of pay attention to. But I certainly don't mind the move. You know, you need some bench help. They had one of the worst benches in the NBA last year. So this is certainly kind of a bench move to kind of help, you know, solidify that a little bit. Who knows, you know, if there's going to make any other moves coming up. I certainly think that they have to make some kind of move. I know that they probably need another two guard behind Zach LaVine. Otherwise, it's going to be a lot of LaVine and Wiggins minutes next year, which certainly may not be a bad thing, but I don't
but
think you want to...
But it feeds the Thibodeau running guys into the ground.
Exactly.
Yeah, come on, Tibbs.
Exactly. So
Thibodeau.
I certainly don't mind the move.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think boring is not necessarily a bad thing in a year where the Grizzlies made Mike Conley the most highest paid player in the NBA.
The takes so, after that were so bad, though.
Yeah, yeah, no, and honestly, it is, it's a big cap, and the NBA is adjusting. Certainly, they let the genie out of the bottle here, letting Durant go, and we don't need to get into all that. But basically, the Wolves were smart kind of to be fiscally sound, especially when you have a lot of young players that you got to pay in the future here.
I think what you do is you let the scrap, you pick up scraps on one-year deals, maybe guys that are, that can help you. I guess the question I have, too, is Kevin Garnett the best use of your 14th spot?
Yeah.
And if he's not, let's say there's a projectable 23-year-old in free agency. And I, since I don't know basketball well enough, I couldn't give you a name. But yeah. Let's say, you know, Festus of Azeli.
Yeah, yeah.
If he gets his rights pulled back, and I think he did, you know, and you know Peck isn't going to give you anything, and so you really do need another big man, are you using that last roster spot on a guy like that who's, I think, 26, or Garnett who's, 40 or whatever he is? Those are all questions I have to ask. But I do like lying in the weeds a little bit in that when – it's kind of like when you give a little kid money and they just blow it all. You want to see what's left after the fact, and maybe the next year when there's even more money besides, and you've viewed the landscape, you can truly figure out what guys are worth. You can also figure out how you're going to pay your own guys. And I think that's going to be a smart vision, especially if this year was never going to be anything more than somewhere between 8th and 10th in the West,
Yeah. Regardless.
So that's all I got for this week for Midwest Swing. Next week, we're going to have Chris Swick from Big League Stew.
Yeah.
It's the Yahoo Sports baseball blog, on with us. He'll be calling from the West Coast, so it's going to be mighty early for him. But that's going to be fun. We're going to talk a little bit of All-Star Game, a little bit of national stuff, and we'll see where we go from there. So thanks for joining us, and check us out next week on Midwest Swing, part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
Hey guys, this is Tom Schreier, co-founder of ColdOmaha.com. Thank you for listening to the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and leave us a comment and a rating. Also, don't forget to check out ColdOmaha.com to see all of our podcasts and read articles about your favorite teams in the Twin Cities. If you have any suggestions or comments on anything related to Cold Omaha, email us at editors@ColdOmaha.com or follow us on Twitter @ColdOmahaMN.